Welcome to episode 18 of Pod Rock. With me, as always, is Mr. Justin Case. How you doing tonight?
Oh, doing great, Ben. How are you doing?
Oh, you know, technical difficulty after technical difficulty for me. I don't know about you.
Well, half of it's my fault, as indicated part of this. But yeah, we're here. That's all that matters.
Yeah. So note to self, when you're setting up studios, make sure your mics are in the right position and the locked trays.
Yeah, that's very important.
Back in their upright positions.
Yeah, well, it also helps to have everything hooked up before you start the show. At any rate, yeah, there's a little bit of music buzz going around. I'll let you go first, Ben.
You know what?
By the way, honestly, this is episode 18.
Yeah, we're getting closer to 20.
Yes.
And after that's 25, we can celebrate, right? Is that where, like, the golden years or whatever it is?
Yeah, that's 50. We're a quarter of the way in.
Sweet. I've heard that many times in my life. So I don't have many ideas for music news today. I've been listening to a lot of music, and that's been what I've kind of focused on, is different music, different styles. Even went back per your recommendation for Toto. I saw the rains in Africa. Not even a smile. Okay. I guess we'll move on.
I don't like
on.
That song.
No, I just, I've been doing just a lot of, I guess if you want to call it research, that's what I do. I listen to a lot. I ingest a lot and, you know, look for different ideas, different things that stand out to me, different techniques. A lot of that just stems from, you know, things like Eddie Van Halen. As you know, he was self-taught and he would listen to things. And even he admitted, I take things from other people, right? Mimicking and learning and turning it into your own style is definitely a thing. So if you have music news, I'll let you at it.
I did see they had a little segment, Eddie Trunk's still going on about his backing tracks debacle. Well, it's not his debacle, but he's still, I was looking at a few things online and they'll throw up stuff like he got into this question segment about with Blackie Lawless, from the lead vocalist, the founder of Wasp, at least one of the founders of Wasp, if not the founder. And they talked about the whole thing on, if you guys would watch or listen to episode 17, previous episode, we get into that ourselves. And so I watched some of that, and a lot of the things they talked about kind of mimicked what we were talking about. Like if there's vocalists like Queen did that back in the day, but they showed like 20 singers in the back.
Right.
You know, they were honest about it. And when I listened to that today, I kind of had an agreement. I think the band themselves are not playing fake instruments, and it's not even a lead vocal. It's as if you want to create the sound of the CD, but as close as you can, but still have the live band over top of that. That's different than as if you just had nobody singing at all and no one really playing. Right. So that's an absolute ripoff. And so they kind of talked about, like, well, enhancing something so that it resembles what's on the CD, not exact copy, but and it's subjective, I guess, because if there's a big orchestra on the CD or the album or whatever, the MP3, whatever you want to call it, that's, they would roll a sequence in the back, like a tape or a sound patch or whatever, for the orchestra that they used on, you know, the album, which is common. I mean, you guys do that. But if you're not actually singing, that's definitely a ripoff, especially if you're charging a lot for tickets, like this Dua Lipa lady, I guess, that they were talking about. Her, she dropped her mic and the vocals were still going. Like, she wasn't singing at all.
Oh, no.
Actually, big surprise. None of those pop acts actually do anything but dance on stage.
So that's an Ashley Simpson thing. That's what happened to her.
Yeah. Remember how it ended her career? Well, it's not ending anyone's career now. How about you give this lady her career back?
Here's the other thing that's really, I don't know if you know stats, and shocking on this one, Milli Vanilli, that started the whole thing.
Yeah. They
got Grammys, or they got awards. I don't know if it was a Grammy. They got awards for their music. They came away with two of them, even though they got ousted and called out for it. Right. So like you're saying, I think it's very subjective to what the person wants to see. Right. For me personally, I want to see somebody play their instrument. I want to hear off notes. I want to see that energy that person's bringing from playing that music live, right? The orchestra thing, I can understand that, because paying 160 people to have a full-fledged orchestra, you know, sitting behind you live every single night can get expensive. Totally get that. Understand that. But when you have the main core of the band, your drummer or your singer or your guitar players not doing what they do, it is, to me, kind of disappointing. You know, it's not that I don't want them to sound good, but you can. You take a look at people like Rush. Three people can make a huge amount of noise, and they can make it sound really good with the three of them, right? The bass player, Geddy Lee, multiple keyboards in front of him, and still playing the bass, still doing what he does, and they still bring the sound, right? So I think there are things that are possible. I think there are things that you can do and can't do live, but going in and doing an album, creating the music, there is a lot of things that go into it. There are a lot of keyboards that people don't know, especially back like in the 80s or even going on further, songs from like the band Creed, Hate 'Em, Like 'Em, with Arms Wide Open has keyboards in it. It's faint. It's not as prominent, but they have that stuff in there. You know, do they have a keyboardist live? I'm going to probably lean toward no, because it's not as prominent. But when you have things like Silent City from Queensryche that has that orchestra and it is a main attraction part of the song, it's going to be hard to duplicate that unless you do bring it, you know, either through a synthesizer or however you play it, through a click track and the ear monitors played out loud through the PA, you know, to get that, the ambient sound to fill that song out. I was even thinking about that when I was listening to One Vision from Queen, you know, one of my personal favorite songs that they did and recorded. And there's a lot going on in that song, not just guitar playing and not just singing and drumming, but there's a lot of different ambient sounds that are through that whole entire song. I have yet to go back and try to see how it sounds live and find a video for it. And I probably will do that tonight after our podcast. But I'm a person that looks at the imperfections or a missed note as not necessarily a bad thing, as long as it's not like someone's in a drunken stupor on the stage and you really can't understand what they're playing, right? Nobody's perfect. You could sit and play forever, but it's the human side of it, right, that comes out.
Yeah, and it goes back to what I said before. Rehearse your songs, and if the band's any good, they're still going to sound decent. You're going to have that core band that's there. If people actually went and saw, if people today, let's say they brought like an 80s band, they were able to take a time travel. It's like Star Trek, right? Where you can take it here, just get in, hop in real quick. We're going to take a quick trip to 2023. We'll get you from 1984 or 85, whatever. And you drop them at a stage and say, hey, this one concert you got to do in the future here in 2023 for this crowd that normally listens to pop music. I would be curious to see what the reaction would be if they were just the band and they didn't have anything that they played in the background. And they still did their whole act. They did the whole thing. And let's say Van Halen, they didn't, you know, before they got real keyboard heavy, let's say prior to the 1984 album, where Eddie started using a lot of synthesizers. It'd be curious to hear, like, if they did, like, they took the Mean Street album or they took their debut album and played it live in 2023, totally theoretic, total sci-fi right here, and brought him into the future and played that. I mean, it'd be cool to see the reaction of the crowd now, where nothing's auto-tuned, nothing is piped in, and you had a truly flesh and bone performance, right? Because the crowd would have already heard the song on classic rock radio or whatever format it would be now, or heard it on YouTube or wherever, so they know what they're going to hear. But how would they react to a raw band playing that? No keyboards, nothing. I would love to see the reaction, how it would go over. I think they would love it. Because if the band was electrifying, which they were, and they're killer, I mean, you're talking about, I know, guys, we always reference Van Halen, but there's such a great standard to anchor, right? They were like the biggest band in the country, you know, back, you know, they were taking senior acts like Journey, and you know, a lot of these bands would get upset with them because they actually got the crowd going more than the headliners did. They were an opening act.
So, yeah, it's that raw energy. Yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
So I think that their raw energy would, the crowd would just feed off of that. I mean, because they'd think about it, they'd know who Van Halen is, but like, this is the original lineup with David Lee Roth or whatever in the early 80s or whatever. And, you know, and I love Hagar too. I love all incarnations of Van Halen, so this is not a singling out of saying these guys are better or whatever. But I'm just using them as an example. That's all I'm doing. I think it'd be really cool to see the reaction of that. And, you know, I could see now where, you know, he could probably get away with, in my opinion, still be a relatively genuine performance if you did have a few things. Because even if Van Halen would, like when they did Why Can't This Be Love, even when they re like when they went and did the stuff with Gary Cherone back in like 1998. I remember when they did Live at the 10 Spot, and which they put on MTV, and their first show was Australia, and like live they were great, and Gary Cherone like sounded awesome live. You know, it was all real musicians, you know, actually playing. And but the thing was, they did pipe in the sequence off of the album. They did pipe in that sound effect because they didn't have a keyboard player, so they did use some tracks off the actual album and pipe those in, and then they all play their instruments. So I think that's fine because you can't. It's funny because Blackie Lawless taught on when Eddie Trunk was asking him. It was a great interview, and he was talking about like, well, how much of your vocal do you use live? I mean, he really laid it out to him. Eddie Trunk laid it out to him, and you know, Blackie said, well, it's me, you know. And he said, you know, sometimes towards the end of the tour, you start getting tired. And he goes, I don't usually crack. Like his voice doesn't crack. He goes, it only happened maybe once or twice towards the end of the tour because he was getting tired. But he goes, it's all me. And he goes, I could hear myself in the monitors. And he goes, you know, they piped in, they used an orchestra and they piped it in. And he's playing over it, and he said it was like an almost like an out of body experience for him to hear his vocal live with an orchestra sound, you know, playing. So you kind of have to, you've got to take him at his word, because I could see where that'd be really cool because you're in the moment, you've got the crowd who obviously Wasp fans are just, they're just like totally into what Wasp does. They're very loyal fans to the point that they actually help promote like a 40th anniversary tour, you know, and everything. And so they're just really like dedicated fans. And so that must have been something for him to know that people in the crowd, which in some cases could involve like parents and then their kids, like teenage kids or maybe kids in their 20s or 30s, multi-generational people in the crowd. And then you hear that, that must have taken them over the top. That's a pretty cool thing to be able to say, you know. So I think that I kind of have to say, like, if it's something minor that gets you closer to making the sound complete, you know what I mean? You're not carbon copy of it, but you still have the live band. But if you use certain segments from elect, you know, and pipe it in, I think that's okay. I guess is what I'm long-windedly trying to say.
Yeah, I think you're right. I agree with you. The other part of it that I guess from my perspective, I never looked at going and seeing what we'll take for instance, Britney Spears, Kelly Clarkson, any of the like that type of music. When I think about it, if I were to think about going and seeing them, it's more about the stage production. It's more about the video monitors, right? Taylor Swift, she's got this whole huge thing going on right now with some big old huge monitor where she jumps into it, supposedly, right? Video technique tricks, parlor stage, whatever you want to call it.
Copperfield stuff, yeah.
Yeah, to me, it's okay. I'm paying $120 to go to a sing along, right? And I'm not trying to demean what she does. I'm sure in the studio, she's giving her performance, right? She's sitting in front of a mic like you and I are doing right now, and she's not getting winded by dancing around, by moving around, like you're saying, right? Dua Lipa, she dances. That's what she does, right? It's the entertainment value. So I'm not shocked to hear that, for one. Two, if I were to go to a concert like that, it wouldn't be about me actually hearing the vocals. Minus one person, and that would be Christina Aguilera, because she has got some pipes on her.
She's got a huge vocal range.
And she does sing live, and she sings well, right? When she does. And I don't know. I've never been to an actual concert of theirs. I cannot claim that I know for sure that she sings every note or there's background. Don't know. But, you know, the point I'm trying to make is I wouldn't expect there to be a guitar player actually bleeding his fingers out. I wouldn't expect the drummer to be smashing it up and breaking cymbals or sticks right there on stage, right? I'm going to see a sing-along with a bunch of other people that like the music that just want to turn that radio dial up and crank it to 10 and hear, you know, Taylor Swift's song with a visual in front of me, with her standing there or running around or doing whatever she does. When I go and see a rock concert, I want to see that guitar player bending those strings. I want to hear notes, even if they're missed. I want to see him just pouring his emotions out through his instrument, right? I want to see the singer, Bono, sweat on me, whatever, you know, you get that energy, like you're saying, from that live act, from the rock music, when I go and see a rock show. So part of that is, what are you going to see and what are you really paying for?
I'm paying for Yngwie Malmsteen shredding the guitar strings for real.
See what I'm, yeah, exactly. I will pay to see that. Absolutely.
I have hearing loss. I have ringing in my right ear to prove of from the giant PA system just off to the right hand side.
Yngwie gave me tinnitus. Yeah, I don't know. It's just a difference of the type of music, right? Country music, same thing. Garth Brooks was a great entertainer. He had an awesome live stage show and he did an amazing thing for country music when he came out and he did it. I mean, he was selling tickets like mad, but it was entertainment, right? Along with the music.
You know, if you mention Chris Gaines on Twitter, he'll show up.
You just did. Let's see what happens.
Oh, no.
You heard it here. No, no.
At any rate, yeah, I mean, you'd be surprised. I mean, there's a Christian group called the Newsboys. The drummer had a rotating drum kit. I mean, he was doing everything Tommy Lee could do. He was playing sideways while the drum kit is spinning. I mean, it was nuts. And, like, the singer went out on this catwalk and played drums along with the drummer on stage. And it was, oh, my gosh, these guys were, like, over the top awesome. And I did not expect it. I just thought it would be kind of like sugar, bubblegum, kind of like, you know, mainstream Christian pop music. No, these guys actually played and sang. And they didn't even have a bass player. They had a keyboard. So it was like listening to the Doors. You know, it just blew my mind how good they were. And they're playing guitar solos and, like, their guitarist was awesome. He's American. And the other guys are Australian, right? So it's one of the best. I saw them twice. I saw them when they came through. I saw them on the way back. And it was funny because on the way back, their stage was all beat up from being on the road. And there's like, you know, you could tell it was really beat, you know. It was so awesome. And being able to see, like, whole families there, like, people there with their, like, little kids. And, like, you had nothing to worry about. There wasn't any booze or drugs or any, you know, anything vulgar. Like, everyone was having a great time. I mean, people were just going nuts and just enjoying themselves. It was one of the coolest things I've ever seen. And I've seen Iron Maiden live. I've seen Rob Halford live, Queensryche, Yngwie Malmsteen, Steve Vai. I saw him twice live. And there's a certain, I've seen Tool. I saw them live. I mean, that's just a short list. I mean, I've been to so many shows live, and that was one of the best ones I've ever seen. I could not believe how good they were. And like Tool, my brother begged me to go to Tool because I'm not a Tool fan, and just a little too out there for me. But they had the best sound quality I've ever heard at a show. It's really interesting when you get these bands who you least expect a quality about them. They show. I'm like, I never thought I'd go to a Tool show and be able to hear every single note from, you know, every instrument and every vocal. It was just dialed in tight. And that's like Adam Jones had problems with the monitors. And they still just sounded crystal clear. I didn't even have ringing in my ears afterwards. That's how dialed in they were.
A good sound engineer right there.
Yeah, yeah. It was top notch, man. It's a weird stinking show, you know, very strange. But I got to tell you, sound-wise, I was impressed immensely. And they put on a show for people. They're actually playing their instruments because they're a prog band. So, yeah, that was interesting. And So those are the two bands that I think I probably had the best experience, as far as one was sound and then one was just the overall performance and the players. They're just incredible musicians. And the opening acts were really good. You know, I saw Godsmack like twice, and there was four bands on the bill. Or no, there's I saw a Perfect Circle in a gymnasium in like Rochester or something. That was interesting. That was a super intimate gig. There's only probably like a few hundred people there. That was interesting. But anyway, that was kind of, it's, you know, you go to these things when you're younger and it's like a weird dream that you had or something, you know, it's just like a different season of your life, you know, and you, oh man, it's, you know, but anyway, they had like, when I saw Godsmack, they had like four, this band called Cold was on there, right?
Yep. Heard of them.
They sounded great live. They were incredible. And they did a little sequence when they did that song Just Got Wicked. I remember they did it. They piped in a sequence for that too. And then they did Systematic was second on the bill. They were fantastic. And then it was Stained, and then Godsmack was I think they were co-headlining with Stained, but like Godsmack was the main attraction. And those guys gave your money's worth, man. They played both albums in their entirety, just about.
Yeah, and, they're good. They're good live. I've seen them.
What's that?
Yeah, they're good live. I've seen them.
They're better live than their albums are. Their albums, their studio is nothing compared to how good they sound live. They sound better live, which is a separate podcast we could do on who sounds better live than in studio, which we should. That's definitely an idea. So let's jot that one down. But
yeah,
anyway, I'm getting all over the map here, but it's because I get excited and this happens. But, you know, the thing is like, I've never seen a group that piped things in where I was disappointed, because, I mean, you're talking, you know, they're actually singing and playing their instruments. Those are just the bands that I personally have seen. I've never been disappointed. And, you know, I mean, rock bands tend to be, especially the veterans, you know, like I saw Iron Maiden during Lake New York, and they had a stage set, like Eddie was up there, and they had like, it was for the Wicker Man tour, you know. And that was awesome. And like Rob Halford was just stinking banshee. I mean, that guy's legit, you know. It was crazy. And that's when like, and Queen, he was the opener, Queen, because it was a solo album. And then it's like one of, yeah, it was like a solo album that came out in like 2000 or 99, something like that. And then they had the second on the bill was Queensryche, when they had Kelly Gray in the group. And their performance there was a little, some of the songs that they picked, because they're promoting their album, that album, I don't know which one it is, but they're promoting that album. So they're on a tour with them in the summer. And then, but when they played like, trying to remember which, they obviously they did some of their classics like Jet City Woman. And that, obviously the high point was when they did Jet City Woman. That was the big crescendo, and they're like, I remember Michael Wilton being awesome on that. When he's playing a solo, he had the Skull ESP guitar, and it was like awesome, man. That was a high point for me, was seeing him play that solo live.
Yeah, there's a lot of with rock bands, I think, in general. And like I said, I don't go partake in certain shows just because I have a tendency, obviously, to want to gravitate toward rock music in general, right, or bands that have guitar players, bass players, singers. I don't think I've really been disappointed with going to see one of those. One of my first shows was over at the Gorge, and it was a 12-hour event, and it had bands from noon till midnight. Queensryche and Heart were headlining, and it was like an all-day event. And everybody there that I saw,
who was the lineup for Queensryche at that time?
It was Chris DeGarmo was in the band, Jeff Tate, Mike, Eddie, and Scott. So it was the originals. It was the original lineup. And I got to see the original lineup twice. And that was the first time. They didn't have a lot of stage stuff going on because they were just, you know, they were touring around on the Empire album and not Operation Mindcrime. And then when, what album was it that came out? It was the one before Here and Now Frontier, Promised Land.
That's the one I think I saw them on was Promised Land. Is that the one with Kelly Gray on it?
No, Promised Land had Chris. That was his second to last album. But they had, not only was the music just top notch, but the stage and the production value that they put into it was amazing. One of the songs, the song Promised Land, they actually had a bar brought out onto the stage with tables. They brought people from the crowd to sit at those tables. Like the band was the bar band, and Jeff was singing at the bar for that song. I mean, it was crazy. But you could tell all that stuff was live because the vocal, you know, intonation of how he was singing things was different in some spots, right? If you were playing it from a record, it wouldn't change. The music, some of the notes and the solos were held out longer, or there was an extra bend or what, you know, stuff like that, where you know it, you just know yeah. it's live.
Yeah. It's because it's the musicians feed off the energy of being there. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of good music that I've been lucky to see. Candlebox was another one that, you know, I thought their musicianship was amazing. First time I saw them was in my high school gymnasium. And in one of the songs, the guitarist, Pete, his Les Paul was either out of tune or there was something wrong with it. Right. So he was trying to play it all over the neck in different spots to get the right tone. And he had it by the end of the song where he just took from the headstock and smashed the butt of it on the stage. But besides that, there was another section in the song where he was trying to fiddle with it, and the rest of the band just automatically knew to play the same four bars, the same measures, right? And just continued to loop that until he went into his guitar solo. So it was almost like clockwork, like, okay, we're not hearing him playing. We're just going to go to this. When we hear it kick off, boom, then we're going to continue on. And to me, that shows musicianship. You know, it shows a tight band. It shows they know their craft, right? When you're going to hear it, and you know it's live, because you don't hear that on a record unless you're skipping it and repeating that same second over and over again.
You know, it's funny, Van Halen did that. They're in 2015. I think that was their last tour. They are on the Jimmy Kimmel Live. There's a YouTube video you can watch where it's the raw performance. Well, David Lee Roth was doing this. He had the mic stand or something. He had a metal rod. He's treating it like a bow staff, himself in the nose and breaking his nose or cutting his nose open. And he's bleeding all over the place. And so he goes to get help and for the bleeding. And then like Eddie looked at Alex and Wolfgang and they just went into a jam. It was awesome.
That's the way to do it, in my opinion.
And
right?
Professionals. And just, you know, it makes me sad. We will never see that again. It just blows. It still blows my mind that we're never going to get to see those guys again on stage together. It sucks. But I'm not going to drag her down. But I just, at any rate, yeah, it makes you wonder how much these bands really like playing date after date after date, playing the same songs over and over. And you see some of that frustration, I think, you know, if their instruments aren't working right, or maybe there is, you know, there's all kinds of weird stuff that happens, and the band has to, you know, how to react to it. It's funny because there's a Rammstein video on YouTube where he was going to play. I think they started the show out at one of the song links. There was what they were. I'll send this out with this funny story. At least I thought it was funny. The singer clearly didn't think it was funny. He went to go start singing, and the guy forgot to turn the microphone on, so the guy's singing the first few bars of the song, and nothing's coming out. He looks at it. He starts fidgeting with the mic, and it turns on. He picks up the water bottle and throws it at the sound guy. He's so mad.
But I meant to ask you, I think I reposted or I liked on Twitter. Rick Beato actually interviewed Nuno Bettencourt.
I got to watch it. And there's a really good one, Marty Friedman, that I haven't watched either. So
I'll have to check that one out. I haven't seen it. I'll go and look. The one from Nuno, I was floored. The guy gets it. Not that I didn't know that he didn't, but he understands the energy from the crowd. He understands. He says in there, he's like, yeah, I'm not an Eddie replacement. There is no one that's going to touch Eddie.
Right, right. He seems like a pretty humble guy anyway. He's a fan. Well,
yeah, well, there's a story in there, and I'll have you listen to it. I'm not going to go into it, but he has a story about Eddie in there, and I think you're going to find a lot of what you and I usually talk about on this podcast actually came up in his conversation about different things. I'll just leave it at that, because I don't want to ruin the Rick's interview with him. I think you'll enjoy it quite a bit, but I didn't realize he had one with Marty. Marty Friedman is, there you go. Yep. That's the shiny one right there. In case you guys can't see it and you're listening to this, Justin has quite the gem I'll let you introduce it.
Oh, I wish this was video, but yeah, it's an EVH Wolfgang USA, top of the heap. So it's a USA model, and got the detuner on it, and ebony fretboard, and got an arch top, flame maple top. So I got this guitar fine. Yeah, it was I had to have it made, you know, build to order, but I got it because after Eddie Van Halen passed, I'm like, I gotta pay some tribute somehow. And I'm not, you know, I'm not a copycat guitar player. I've got my own style, but he definitely influenced me as a player. Yeah. So I figured, like, this is my way of kind of like, okay, here's my little piece of the pie, you know, as far as being a fan of what he contributed, you know.
Well, hopefully we can hear it on some of the solo stuff you've been working on.
Yeah, it'll get there. Yeah, I'm trying to get the stuff done. I got try to get it done by November. Get the rest of these songs in the bag. So, all right, Ben, you want to send us out?
Yeah. Normal thank yous, and for the people that listen to us, Greg Atencio. I know that you listen as much as you probably deny it. I know you're sitting at work listening to this stuff like I do. You know, Justin's other podcast that he does. Check that one out. Case in point as well. We hope his finds you well. And I can't speak tonight. You should probably do it. I'm fumbling.
Mr. Chuck Lynch.
Chuck Lynch.
Hey, Chuck, legend. I got a challenge for you. Go listen to Doc and go listen to George Lynch play. Let me know what you think. Leave it in the comments on our Twitter page.
All right. Thanks for listening, guys. Hope you enjoy this one too. And we'll keep at it. Till next time.
Stay safe.